Good morning to you. I'm Veronica Rickard in today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Monday, and that means it's time for all things political, and we've got a lot to look at this morning. If you were following the news over the weekend, you saw the streets of Iran seem to explode on Saturday night, and today we've seen Republicans calling for a stronger response from the U.S. and an increasing spotlight on former President Rafsanjani. Also this morning, we'll talk about the North Korea's threatened missile test as well. Possible date there of July 4th. We'll see what the U.S. is intending to do about it. Our guest this morning is I.M. Dessler. He's a professor of civic engagement at the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland, and he's the director of the Program on International Security and Economic Policy and a senior fellow at the Center for International and Security Policy at Maryland. And as always, we're happy to take your questions and comments this morning. Maybe there's something we haven't touched on or questions you've got for our guest about Iran, North Korea, or the proposed financial overhaul. You can call us at our regular call-in number, 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or send us your email at talk@wpr.org. And Mac Dessler, so glad you could join us this morning.
Very happy to be with you.
Well, let's start with Iran. If you were watching the news over the weekend, listening to the news, there was a lot of video, there was audio and Twitter reports, and it seemed as though Iran was really exploding there. Catch us up on what happened over the weekend.
Well, Iran has been exploding over the last week. What seems to have happened on the weekend is things have at least really slowed down on the part of the number of demonstrators in the streets, and things have accelerated, unfortunately, in terms of what appears to be the regime's determination to quell this by force if necessary. And President Obama carefully raised the tone of his rhetoric in terms of criticizing the regime for, at least criticizing the action taken to repress demonstrators who use force against them. Apparently, there are at least a score and maybe more people have been killed over the weekend. And so it's a very difficult situation. It's most impressive in terms of the number of Iranians who have been willing to go out in the streets. One demonstration was more than 1 million people, which is quite spectacular in any country for any cause. On the other hand, it's hard to see, unless there are serious and growing divisions within the group of ruling mullahs, it's very hard to see how this ends in the short run at a victory for the demonstrators.
Right, and as far as the rhetoric you mentioned for President Obama, he's been criticized this morning for not giving strong enough support to the protesters. On the other hand, he's saying, well, wait a minute, the last thing anybody needs is to give the appearance that the West and, you know, the U.S. is meddling in Iran's affairs.
Of course, the regime has been saying specifically, including the ruling Ayatollah, has been saying that this is all being stirred up by foreigners, particularly the United States. So even though Obama's been being very careful, nevertheless, the charge is there. And presumably, it would accelerate or become more credible if he were louder and clearer in terms of his condemnation.
I've seen criticism of Sarkozy in France and in Britain. I haven't seen a strong finger pointed at the United States.
No, I think they are criticizing the regime in Iran. I think critics, Republicans in particular, some Democrats have been critical of Obama for not going further. My personal view is that he's handling this about right. It's a very difficult situation, and it's a free shot for many people, including people like myself, to say this is appalling, that the Iranian regime ought to have a new election, et cetera, which I believe to be true. It's much more serious and consequential if a U.S. president says these things, and Obama knows he's U.S. president, and he's being serious, I think.
Well, and in terms of concessions, what the opposition has maybe achieved so far, maybe this is a small victory, but the Guardian Council has acknowledged that there were voting irregularities in 50 electoral districts. Does that mean anything at this point?
It's hard to say. I mean, I'm skeptical so far, unless the detail develops suggesting that these were really substantial, and in which case this could open up an examination of the broader electoral count. My guess is the Guardian Council is trying to give some concession to the protesters and to get greater credibility, because the regime obviously knows it has a serious problem of credibility and legitimacy right now, particularly with the rush of the Supreme Leader Khamenei to endorse re-election of the president, Ahmadinejad.
Well, he's pretty much, firmly aligned himself with Ahmadinejad. And on the other hand, he's, I gather, embroiled in sort of a longstanding political rivalry with the former president of Iran, Rafsanjani. And isn't that one of the wild cards, exactly how that's going to play out?
That is very much a wild card. I mean, Rafsanjani has, I think, traditionally been very much an inside player. And it's interesting that he has been more publicly visible as a critic on this issue right now. And that's Iranian PhD student at the University of Maryland who is following these matters very closely, and he sees this as a sign of hope for the opposition that Rafsanjani has been essentially taken sides and declared himself. I confess I'm skeptical that in the end it will be this will end in a success for the protesters, though I would be absolutely delighted if it did.
So why do you think it is that the protesters, is it the intense military presence that we're starting to hear about this morning on the streets that's threatening to mount a revolutionary response to the protesters? Is that what's going to quash it all?
It could. I think there are reports that today, Monday, was going to be a big day, and that the protesters were going to try to, or maybe are going to try to mount a major presence in the streets. The argument I've heard from the protester direction is if they really turn out a large number of people, the regime can't deal with them effectively. They can't really shoot them all, and therefore they have to accept it. It's when they get down to a small number of people that the police can dominate. Hopefully that's where it goes. But alternative is that sufficient numbers of people are scared off by the threat that the numbers are much smaller and then the police get the upper hand. And there also seem to be evidence that the regime is preparing the way to arrest Mousavi for illegal action. Some professors who are presumably aligned with the regime have expressed a legal judgment that Mousavi has been breaking the law, or encouraged a breaking of the law.
What's at stake here for the United States, whether Ahmadinejad takes the victory there, or whether the opposition prevails? What is at stake for the United States?
Well, I think over the longer term, the United States would benefit enormously if there were a democratic, relatively open, relatively liberal, in the traditional sense, regime in Iran. Our relationship with Iran is very abnormal. We've had essentially a regime of sanctions and non-recognition for just about 30 years now, and ever since the taking of the U.S. hostages back in the late 1979. And I think there's a lot to be said for a normalization of relations if you could genuinely get the Iranians to come to some accord on the nuclear issue, to restrain themselves in terms of support for terrorists like Hamas or Hezbollah. And in exchange, the United States could benefit Iran enormously in multiple ways by removing sanctions, making business much easier for Iranians to conduct both with us and with others. In principle, this is probably going to be easier to reach this sort of agreement with a Mousavi presidency than with an Ahmadinejad presidency, and now particularly if the regime represses, and Ahmadinejad is a president of questionable legitimacy, at least in terms of the broader world, it may be even harder to negotiate anything, and he may turn out to be embattled and very defensive and maybe more mm-hmm. volatile than ever in what he says.
Well, if the opposition fails, as you seem to think that it will, isn't there the chance that all of this then comes to roost at Barack Obama's doorstep and people say, United States missed a huge opportunity here and we didn't stand up and as the Republicans are saying, didn't take a leadership position?
It's hard to see. They will say this. It's hard to see how they could really make that stick. Just because this is not a made in America revolution. We were, I think, as taken by surprise by it as the Iranian government. I think all the people who are now loud critics of Obama were equally taken by surprise. It's a situation where U.S. direct invisible U.S. support could very easily backfire. I just think I don't think that issue has very long legs in terms mm-hmm. of. In terms of Obama being blamed for the failure of revolution or incipient revolution in Iran. However, I think it will increase criticism if Obama then tries still to negotiate with Iran. It would probably increase opposition to that, so it would create more difficulty for him on that track.
So you don't think this is going to stain his new record as a leader in international relations?
I think it makes it harder, but I don't think it will stain it in a fundamental way, no.
I suppose, though, that's up for grabs, depending on what happens in Iran over the next few days, over the next couple of weeks.
Well, rather the problem with presidents, with leaders anywhere, is that you are affected by events that you cannot control and which your power to affect them is very limited, and this is certainly Obama's situation with the Iranian uprising.
It's been talked about in Iran as not just a struggle between Ahmadinejad and Mousavi, but as a struggle over who gets to claim the mantle of Islam, who uses that rhetoric and aligns himself most closely with Islamic, the religion of Islam and the mantle of that the most favorably. So I guess I'm wondering if you think that will end up playing a factor or whether it's just going to come down to force.
Well, I think if the ruling group stays together under the Supreme Ayatollah, then it will come down to force, probably. The hope for the opposition is that there are divisions which are not fully evident yet within the ruling group that will create resistance, create pressure. You hear about isolated ayatollahs saying that participation in the march is moral and consistent with Islam, but these don't seem to be dominant people. They seem to be individuals. So the hope is in any revolution, what typically makes the difference is when the ruling group becomes divided and some of the group moves over to the side of the mm-hmm. those who resist, and whether this is a revolution or a reformist movement or whatever, that would be the decisive thing, and that's what one would have to hope for. There's some signs of that, but I'm skeptical about whether it's strong enough at this stage. The regime will be weakened by it because its credibility will be undercut, both inside Iran and internationally.
Well, the backing of Mousavi is largely youth-driven, and in that sense, you could view this as a young seed that could come to fruition, you know, maybe 5, 10, 15 years down the road.
That's true, and there is and youth will get older. There will be, presumably, another presidential election in 4 years. The president would not be running again, and therefore it would be a more open situation. Of course, Mousavi is interesting because he was regarded until the election as quite conservative, quite within the ruling group, and now he has essentially been adopted by resistance and has staked his position in his sort of kept caught the wave and is seeking to lead it, but also to caution people. So he's trying to strike a difficult balance of not denouncing the ruling Ayatollah directly, but nevertheless continuing the stand that the election was stolen and that there should be a revote.
Well, how do you see this playing out ultimately? I know no one knows the way it's going to happen. You're inclined to think that the force that we're seeing now, the threats from the Revolutionary Guard, will probably do the trick. What happens then? Does Mousavi just put a notice on his website, you know, saying it's time to step back? Or how does the end game happen?
Well, obviously, there's several possible end games, and it's very hard to predict. I mean, the worst end game would be, I think, for Mousavi to be arrested, brought to trial, and for the regime to, you know, seek essentially a very hard line to repress him and his supporters. A gentler end game that would still lead to the short-term triumph of the regime would be for Mousavi to step back and decide that whatever the facts of the situation, he lacks the power and that therefore have to sort of save to fight another day, but try to keep the movement going in various ways so as to influence issues as they arise, try to get more running room, more space for freedom, for political activity, for speech within Iran, trying to constrain Ahmadinejad, and then the outcome we would love to see is one in which the continuing resistance and big evidence comes out of rigging of the election, leading to basically a relook with Mousavi as president and a chastened supreme religious leadership.
What are the odds that you would give maybe the chance that this thing ends up being bigger than anyone thinks it's going to be, that people do take to the streets, the Revolutionary Guard tries to crack down, and we see bloodshed and what moves from what began as a protest over a recount to a general questioning of Iran's fundamental government?
Well, I think there is already clearly questioning of the fundamental government among the people who are marching. They're not saying that so much because they're trying to stay within their bounds. But I think I think that's a big problem for the leadership, is they've lost some legitimacy, some credibility because of this, and more people are willing to take that position. I think there's some chance of this happening. I don't think it's probable, but it's possible. I mean, that you could really have a large, sustained movement challenging the legitimacy of the regime, but what they would do is a serious question.
Well, let's leave it there right now as we take a quick break, and then we'll come back and continue with Monday's All Things Political. We're starting off this morning with Iran as there's a temporary, I guess, lull in the storm as we wait to see what happens as Iran deploys the Revolutionary Guard to back down protesters, and waiting to see what the next move is there. And we'd love to hear what you think about this or other current events this morning. You have questions and comments for Mac Dessler. We're happy to take them at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or send us your email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up today on Wisconsin Public Radio at 12:30, it's Chapter a Day, and Susan Sweeney is reading from How Far is the Ocean from Here?, a novel by Amy Schern. Then at 1 o'clock, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Veronica Rickert in this morning for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This morning, all things political, and we've begun by talking about the situation in Iran with our guest, Mac Dessler, who is a professor of civic engagement at the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland, and he's the director of the Program on International Security and Economic Policy. We'll go to the phone lines now. We've got a call waiting here from Michael in Milwaukee. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Veronica and Matt. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good. How's Kathleen doing?
I think Kathleen's probably enjoying herself a lot on her day off today. Thanks for asking.
Well, I hope so. I'm concerned about her because I know she's had a hard time with some things. So, God bless her. You guys put on a great show, and whatever happens to Iran or whatever, you guys are the best.
Well, thank you. We'll pass on those sentiments.
Thank you. You have a vote from me. So, I have a plethora of questions here, but I guess my first question is this Ayatollah. I remember the Ayatollah Khomeini. I guess you pronounce it. Some people pronounce it different. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. 1979, when we had the hostage crisis.
Right.
Yes, the Iranian hostage crisis, and Carter was kind of toppled because of that. Was he not?
Well, that was an important factor in his loss to Ronald Reagan in the election of 1980. That's right.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And so is this Khomeini, is he a new leader, or is that the same leader?
No, he's a new leader. The original Ayatollah died some time ago, and Khomeini, as he is pronounced, is the second person to hold this position of supreme leader since the revolution of 1979.
Oh, wow! Thank you for clarifying that for me. It's been bothering me for some days now because I always hear Khomeini. Now, is he from the same line of Ayatollahs, or a son, or
not a blood relative, but I guess from the same ruling group in a sense.
Well, one of the interesting things about the new Ayatollah is that he was helped into power by Rafsanjani, who is now seems to be sort of at odds with him, given that he's backing the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we thank you, Michael, for your call. Hope we helped clear things up, and thanks for your kind words. And let's move on to Scott in the Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Scott.
Good morning.
Morning.
I would like to ask the guest what he thinks of the opposition possibly calling for a general strike, even if it was only to shut down the city of Tehran. I would think it would have a major impact. I know in other circumstances general strikes have been effective. Does he think that would be the case now? And does he think there might be prospect for this actually happening? And I'll go ahead and hang up and listen on the air. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Interesting question.
I think that's a very good question. And I believe that Mousavi has actually talked about this, or at least suggested that this might be a tactic. I think that would be among the better tactics for the opposition to try to pursue, because it doesn't involve going out in the streets. It simply involves not going to work. And it's hard to punish millions of people for not going to work, and particularly if they centered it on Iran and on Tehran and the major cities where the opposition is the strongest, it could very well be a substantial success. Now, then the question would be, could the regime just wait it out? How would this, what would they do next? But I think it would be a further strong demonstration of support for the resistance if a general strike were observed by, say, most of the people working in Tehran.
Have we seen strikes employed with success in Iran before?
I believe they were employed in the as one of the tactics in the revolution against the Shah, but I confess I'm not absolutely certain of that.
Well, thank you for your question, Scott. And by the way, we do have a couple of open lines right now. If you'd like to get your call in, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. The email is talk@wpr.org. And let's move on now to Rich calling us from Appleton. Hi, Rich.
Well, good morning. How are you folks today?
Morning. Doing well. How are you?
Good. My question is, first of all, I would just like the Republicans to take a step back and quit being so argumentative on everything that Obama does. I was a loyal Republican up till this election, and now it's just getting kind of old. But anyway, what I'm looking at is actually in that vein is that the Republicans mostly, if I'm not mistaken, are kind of jumping up and down saying that we should get a little bit somewhat or more involved in what's going on in Iran right now. And my take on that is maybe the administration is holding back on something like that just in case this all goes Ahmadinejad's way. They don't want to have any ammunition for him to say, hey, and you guys were trying to interfere.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just kind of my take on it.
Well, I think that's true, and I think they also feel that U.S. interference would probably be counterproductive so far as the reform movement is concerned, given the fact that, given the history of U.S.-Iranian relations, given the fact that the United States is still the devil for a number of Iranians, and so I think they feel, you know, a kiss of death might be too strong a word, but a sense that if the United States and the president in particular were to come out very strongly in favor of the opposition, this might hurt them.
Well, it's worth pointing out to Rich that it hasn't been just the Republicans who have been asking Obama to step it up. It's also been Hillary Clinton. What do you think about her position, Mac Dessler?
I'm not sure what you're specifically referring to.
Well, she had said she wanted Obama.
I mean, I think they're more or less coordinated together. She's obviously, you know, the State Department has been critical, but I'm not sure I see a big gap here.
Well, probably not a big gap, but she did pop up over the weekend in the news as people who thought that the U.S. should be more supportive in what it voiced towards the situation in Iran. I don't think she's a huge dissenting voice to Barack Obama, but it is interesting to note that she is out there.
Well, I think she's out there. Of course, everybody has been waiting ever since her appointment to find space between her and Barack Obama in terms of... and so I think one should be... anything she says that looks like it's any different from the president is likely to be picked up and, I think, exaggerated.
Well, thank you to Rich's call there. And we'll take more calls in just a moment. But we also have, we can move on from Iran for just a moment and talk about one of the other things that's been in the news over the weekend and then popping up again this morning is North Korea. And again, Obama's rhetoric coming into question here, or it's making news anyway, about what the threat is here from North Korea's projected missile test. Some people say the North Korea is saying they'll launch toward Hawaii. And is that an aggressive move toward the United States? Certainly the rhetoric is from North Korea. What do you think about what the situation with North Korea as it unfolds right now, Mac Dessler?
Well, the North Korea situation is different from the Iranian situation in that there were, at least until late in the George W. Bush administration, ongoing North negotiations with the North Koreans, with a group of six nations, the United States, North Korea, South Korea, China, Russia, and Japan, seeking to negotiate an end to North Korea's nuclear program in exchange for concessions of various sorts, particularly economic concessions. And these have clearly hit a dead end. North Korea has been reacting by taking a much more militant position. People compare, we don't know a lot about what happens in Iran, but we know much more about Iran than we know about North Korea, which is a much more closed society. And so there's a lot of speculation. The dominant strand of speculation is that the dear leader, Kim Jong-il, is very sick, is trying to maneuver to have power transferred to his son, his third son, upon his death, and that therefore he has to maintain support among hardliners in the military who are always skeptical about the nuclear negotiations, and therefore he is taking whatever taking action, and then when the other nations respond with strengthened sanctions, strengthened UN resolutions, then they take this as an affront and an act of war and go a step further. Now, obviously, the steps have involved testing of weapons, nuclear weapons, missiles. They haven't involved attacking anybody. And problem for the North Koreans is, while the military card is the strongest they have to play, and within the nuclear card, they are badly overmatched in terms of actual power. And so what Obama has been trying to do here is to not overreact, not reward the North Koreans, but at the same time go overboard in terms of response. And I think we have been able to bring the Russians and the Chinese along in terms of somewhat greater sanctions and to legitimize the intervention in the event, for example, that North Korean ships are selling arms that they are not supposed to sell according to UN resolutions, our capacity to intervene in that. And of course, if a ship is boarded, then the North Koreans will call that an act of war, and they will do something, but who knows, it's not entirely clear what they can do.
Well, one of North Korea's main newspapers recently ran that it would be a grave mistake for the U.S. to think it can remain unhurt if it ignites the fuse of war on the Korean Peninsula. That's strong language. How seriously does the United States take language like that from North Korea?
Well, I think the problem with the North Korean language is that if there's ever a currency that is devalued from overuse, it is North Korean rhetoric. I mean, it sounds horrible. It's that they've announced the armistice agreement is no longer of 1953 is no longer valid. This type of rhetoric, if not the specific details, has been standard in North Korea whenever they want to up the pressure, up the concern in the West. So I think the administration is saying we're concerned because we don't really know in the end what this regime is going to do, but they have limited power. They have succeeded in getting all of their neighbors angry and upset at them, and therefore waiting them out is not necessarily the worst strategy.
Let's go back to the phones right now, and we've got a call here from Gary with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Just a quick question, taking it back to Iran for
sure.
A second. The first revolution was clearly an Islamic theocratic revolution. This one, would your guest say, is more of a secular revolution? Because if it is, that's a much tougher nut to crack in an Islamic country like Iran. I'm interested to hear what his thoughts would be on that.
Well, it certainly does seem to be a secular revolution. Obviously, the person leading it is someone who was among the pre-selected candidates for the presidency. As your audience probably knows, the Iranian religious leadership essentially pre-screens presidential candidates and only allows those who are considered to be acceptable religiously, politically, to run in the first place. And so in form, it is simply another Muslim candidate and a previous prime minister, in the case of Mousavi, challenging the current president, Ahmadinejad. However, the support is very heavily secular, and there is a substantial middle class in Iran. There's a substantial educated class, a substantial tradition of literacy, so I think it's clearly in any reasonable definition a secular revolution. Although people in the reform movement will probably say they are not challenging directly the legitimacy of the theocratic regime, and in fact, I think Mousavi has been tried to be careful to walk that line.
Well, thank you for the call, Gary, and we'll take one now from Bill with us from Eau Claire. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, what is the geographical spread of the protests in Iran? The other major cities, we don't hear almost nothing about what's going on in Tabriz, Isfahan, Shiraz, Mashhad, so on and so forth. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Mac Dessler?
Well, I think the visible action has certainly been predominantly in Tehran, but there's certainly been demonstrations in other cities, and there's some evidence that the concern is spreads well beyond Tehran. But I agree the focal point has been the capital, as you would expect.
And, in fact, haven't we heard that there is more support for Ahmadinejad in the rural areas of Iran?
I think everybody agrees that the strongest support for Mousavi is in the urban areas, and the strongest support for Ahmadinejad is in the rural areas, yes.
All right, let's take another quick break right now, and we'll come back and talk all things political this morning. So far, we've touched on Iran and the situation unfolding there in the streets of Iran, and also North Korea and the proposed missile test, which may or may not be headed toward Hawaii, and how the U.S. will respond to that. You can call us about those topics or something else you've seen in the news lately that you'd like to ask about this morning. Give us a ring at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And there's always our email address, which is talk@WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up today at 11 o'clock on Wisconsin Public Radio, Larry Mueller is in, and he'll be talking about the importance of play with our companion animals. His guest is animal behaviorist Patricia McConnell. And then at 12 o'clock, Larry learns about rustic furniture and the Woodlander Gathering in Mineral Point. His guest will be artist Daniel Mack of Warwick, New York. Veronica Rickert with you this Monday morning, on the Ideas Network, in for Kathleen Dunn, as we talk politics during All Things Political this hour. We've been talking about the situation unfolding in the streets of Iran, and also touching on the topic of whether the response from Barack Obama, his rhetoric toward the situation, has been to strike the appropriate note. Some people think there should be more vocal support of the protesters in Iran. We have seen protests in the United States as well, or not protests, but demonstrations in support of the opposition in Iran. And what do you think? Has he struck the proper tone for the moment? And also looking at North Korea this morning as well, and the situation with a proposed missile test, possibly on July 4th. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Our guest is Mack Dessler, professor of civic engagement at the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland. And we'll head to the phones now. We've got Mark calling us from Racine. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I am a guy who's been kind of watching public policy for an awful long time, and I think that a mistake that we as a country make is thinking that we sort of have the right to be the intervener, arbitrator, suggester, director of things. And I think we would really serve ourselves much better sometimes to try and create regional opportunities for consensus and let local pressures help direct things like what's going on in Iran. I was wondering what we might be able to do in that way. There are complex, ambivalent relationships amongst the nations, dependencies, fears, business relationships, all kinds of things, which I think could and would and should be brought to bear on the situation if we just get out of the way, encourage them, and let them happen.
Mack Dessler?
Well, I don't think I think the general approach that you suggested, Mark, is a very sensible one. I don't think we're in the way in the terms of Iran right now, and I think the president and others are trying to stay out of the way for reasons we've talked about before. Part of the problem with Iran in terms of building up coalitions is Iran is already quite isolated. It is not a popular regime in its immediate neighborhood for a range of reasons. And so therefore, it's who you mobilize, who has influence, is a real question. Also, in many our relations with many countries, we have very active business, cultural, other exchanges, etc., such that they're just people are influencing each other day by day, day by day. Well, there's some cultural connections with Iran. My university, the University of Maryland, is hoping to host a senior Iranian scholar at our School of Public Policy in the coming year. But these are modest by comparison with our relationships, the inter dependence with most countries, and therefore there are not as many handles for this sort of indirect coalition building sort of interest. Now, we've been building a coalition of resistance to Iranian nuclear activity, and this has been a course that has been of some effect, but again, there are not as many sort of informal ways, not as many potential friends of Iran that could be mobilized because the regime is isolated pretty much already.
Well, thank you for the call, Mark. And of course, also, you know, we have no diplomatic relations with Iran at the moment. Is there any chance that the U.S. is involved somehow in ways that, you know, are not evident to the public eye?
That is a good question. I suppose there's always some chance. I haven't heard anything specific. Presumably, we have our intelligence agencies have people in Iran, like other places, who are, you know, at least trying to learn what's going on, trying to have you know, good sources of information and intelligence. I doubt that they have been involved in instigating this activity.
Do you think we have contingency plans on the books, though, based on what various situations might unfold in the next few days?
Well, there are always contingency plans, but again, I think it's most unlikely that we would do anything militarily unless something spilled over to Iraq, which is, of course, right on the border.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, I presume we would work with the Iraqis in taking some sort of defensive action. But there's no, I don't know of any real prospect that this will occur. It will probably have the effect of reducing, actually, Iran's influence or impact on Iraq, because the regime will be more preoccupied with reestablishing its domestic sway and its legitimacy at home.
Okay, well, thank you to Mark, and let's move on to Pat in Brookfield. Hi, Pat.
Hey, guys. Simple question. We see the protests here in America by the Iranian-American. What would their preferable position be? Do they wish we were more involved as far as the administration's plan?
I don't know. I'm sure they vary in their views. I expect a lot of them would say that, in fact, for Americans to be active is not helpful. Others probably do want us to be more outspoken. It is interesting that in Iran, as in a, I guess it's a lot of countries, you have expatriates who can vote, and so you do have a lot of people. So a lot of these Iranian-American demonstrators in the United States actually voted in their election.
Thanks for the call, Pat. And let's take a call now from Jody with us from Green Bay. Jody, you're next.
Oh, thank you. First of all, just a comment about Iran. I think we should be staying out of that. That's, you know, to do their own elections. But I wanted to talk about North Korea. Just a question. If they do a missile test toward us, if we did a missile test toward any other big country, what would the response be? And I guess that's what I'm thinking is, you know, if they're doing a missile test towards us, you know, wouldn't that be, that's a much more serious situation to me. And I guess I'd like to hear the response.
All right. Thanks, Jody. Mac Tesler.
Well, several years ago, the North Koreans did a missile test which shot a missile over Japan. And the Japanese were very upset and reacted very negatively to this. I think, I mean, if you do a missile test towards somebody, but the missile doesn't get there or doesn't get very close, it's is that a provocative act? They may want to, North Koreans may want to characterize it as retaliation for sanctions for things like this. It's kind of how we take it. If you test a missile, it has to go in some direction and it has to land somewhere. Presumably you test them so they land in the ocean. And so I think it's, no, I think the, again, whether we call it an act of war or whether we just simply call it a violation of UN resolutions and therefore something that the North Koreans should stop and something which should reinforce our sanctions against them is I think, a reasonable choice, and I would opt for the second.
Well, do you consider, is the fact that it breaks the UN sanctions, but in terms of North Korea just taken on its own, do we presume this is an act of aggression?
Well, I think it's, I would presume it's an act of hostility.
Mm-hmm.
It's an act of, and it's also would seem that it's an act of trying to get our attention, to provoke, but also to get us to make some concessions and to sort of bring them back to the table. And this is what so far I think the Obama regime has resisted doing. They were trying not to reward aggressive behavior on the part of the North Koreans, but at the same time not to take it all that seriously. But of course, they're therefore trying to nullify one of the few cards that the North Koreans feel they can play. They are a weak regime. They're a failure, essentially, in economic terms. The one thing they've been able to achieve is a certain amount of technological progress on the nuclear and on the missile front. Therefore they try to use this as a negotiating ploy.
Well, it's an interesting situation to be in. On the one hand, the residents of Hawaii are uneasy. And
sure.
President Obama has said, don't worry, we've got our I's dotted and our T's crossed, we're capable of handling any threat here. But when people become uneasy, politics can escalate.
Again, I think the... I think presumably the North Koreans want to make the people of Hawaii uneasy. North Korea is a very strange place. There are credible arguments that in fact, at least when these talks started, what the North Koreans really wanted in the end was an alliance with the United States, and that they saw this as the only way out. They also wanted the removal of economic sanctions. They wanted economic cooperation and so forth. Now, there have been many twists and turns. There was a period of several years lost during the Bush administration when they failed to take up the momentum that had been achieved under Clinton toward, I think, a sustainable halt in nuclear development and some movement toward limitations on missile development. That was basically from 2001 to 2005 when the Bush administration then resumed the talks, but in the meantime the North Koreans had built several more nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the political situation there had changed. I say maybe because it's quite hard to tell. But therefore, I think it's quite possible that there was a serious opportunity lost early in this decade to get further with the North Koreans. The second Bush administration tried very hard, I think, to make up for this ground and was not successful.
What's the dividing line? When do we stop sort of batting at North Korea as though it's kind of a slightly pesky fly and take some of these actions seriously? What would it have to escalate to? What point?
Well, I suppose if it were actually an attack, I mean, if somebody actually, the North Koreans attacked a ship, for example.
So it would have to be that much, you think?
I would think so, rather than tests in terms of, partly because it's not clear that a military strike against, say, the nuclear weapons could be definitive. You could certainly put certain facilities out. And there's also concern that level of action by the United States could trigger some sort of suicidal movement across the north-south border. And because the South Korean capital, Seoul, is so very close to the border, there's a danger that, that hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people could be killed, even though we all know that that would end up with the end of the North Korean regime, but it would be devastating before that.
Let's take another phone call now. Let's see, we've got Steve calling from Madison. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I think that the Shah was overthrown in 73 because he tortured and killed his own people, and the present group is doing the same thing, and I think if we're patient that things will take care of themselves there. I think in North Korea, if we address a launch towards Hawaii and stop the transfer of weapons between countries for terrorism reasons that that'll call China and Russia out to support sanctions for some rule of law and treaties in the world. And those are my comments.
All right. Thank you, Steve. And Mac Dessler?
I think those are reasonable. We're trying to impose sanctions. We have had the Chinese and the Russians agree to move further down the line on sanctions. I agree with the administration's position that we are not in a position of weakness vis-a-vis North Korea, that standing strong, tightening the noose on sanctions a bit, but letting time pass is not an unreasonable position.
All right. Thank you to Steve for that call. And looks like there's time for one more very quick call from Dave in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Dave. Could you keep it short?
Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for the opportunity. It's been said that it's unfortunate that hypocrisy isn't painful. And I find it kind of interesting now to watch what's taking place in Iran. For some of the very people who were cheerleading for us to bomb Iran, including one recent presidential candidate, are now worried about the freedom-loving peoples of Iran. My brother-in-law is Iranian, and I know a little bit about it from him, and it's his opinion that if we, kind of, the people who are rising up now know that we support them. The last thing we need to do is get our nose into it. It will work against them.
Okay, I think we have to leave it there, Dave. We've only got 15 seconds left to go, so you get the last word. And Mac Dessler, I appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for being on with us today.
It's been a great pleasure, Veronica.
All right, Mac Dessler with us, the professor of civic engagement at the School of Public Policy. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.